Our Greater Richland Area Cancer Elimination Morning Show continues with a replay of the comments from a couple of doctors that were in attendance on Wednesday night during the Survivors Reception and Captain's Night at the Phoenix Center. The first comments are from Dr. Kenny Lambert of the UW Carbone Cancer Center in Madison, who shared news about research that has been going on recently.
I want to start out before I tell you a bit about how we're using the funds that you donate to the Carbone Cancer Center for research. I wanted to highlight some big news for the Cancer Center that could only happen without donor support from you all. So basically this year, the Carbone Cancer Center was successfully renewed its grant from the National Cancer Institute. So this grant is the basis for the functioning of that Carbone Cancer Center for the state of Wisconsin. And because it did so well, the National Cancer Institute decided to fund it for 7 years instead of the normal 5 years. And that's only given to the top cancer centers in the nation. So that was a big feat, and we were very happy for that. And it extends the amount of time that we have funding of this cycle. The other point I wanted to make is that the University of Wisconsin received two Centers of Excellence SPORE grants for funding bench to bedside translation of fundamental research findings in laboratories to changes in how we practice medicine and how we treat patients, cancer patients. And those two SPORE grants were focusing on head and neck cancer. Actually, that's a renewal, so this is the second 5-year support for that area of research, head and neck cancer, and a new one on prostate cancer. And so these three, the two SPORES and the Cancer Center, bring in around $10 million a year. And that's supporting research or supporting cancer patient care through the Carbone Cancer Center. So that's really great. But we couldn't do it without doing high-risk, high-payout research that we can't go to the NIH and say, fund us because we have a great new idea, but we're not sure it's going to work. So we have to go to philanthropic organizations like GRACE, who give us money to fund these new novel concept ideas to do really breakthrough research. And I'm going to share with you one of those tonight. So again, your donations help support the pioneering research that we can do at the UW. Really look at new directions for research. So the new research I'm going to talk about tonight is to ask, can we detect cancer by simply taking blood from a person and analyzing the blood to see if there is cancer in that individual? Now, this may seem like pie in the sky, because usually you detect cancer by finding a mass or person comes in sick and there's a x-ray or CT scan to detect the presence of a mass, tumor mass. This is a way of finding cancers way before that ever happens. And of course, the earlier you can find a cancer, the better we can treat the cancer, treat the patient, and eliminate the cancer, or at least control it. So early detection is fundamental to our improving the lives of people who have cancer. And this is the story of three outstanding individuals, Joshua Lang on the left, Sean Zhao, and Dr. Sharifi. And they acted together to develop this new approach. And what it comes down to is that DNA cancer cells have abnormal-looking genetic material, DNA. DNA is the genetic material that's in each and every one of our cells. Now, if you look at each and every one of our cells, the amount of DNA is around a yard long, at least. In order for it to get into that small space of a little cell, which is the size of the tip of a pin, it has to be folded into really tight bundles, like shown here, wrapping around spools. Think of thread. The DNA is a thread. It's wrapping around these spools. And the number of the abundance or the density of those spools determine whether or not that particular region of the DNA, your genetic material, is expressed or is silent. And in cancers, a lot of genes, a lot of areas of ours, of the DNA, all of a sudden start getting expressed. So if you can look and see the difference in structure, you can potentially identify a cancer. And that's what these folks did. And it was based upon this, It was based upon the fact that there's new technologies that allow us to detect these differences in DNA structure, shown here, even in blood, okay? So the question is, can we detect cancer by simply analyzing a patient's blood? To ask this, these doctors basically went to a cohort of cancer patients at the University of Wisconsin, obtained their blood under consent for patients who had breast cancer, lung cancer, bladder cancer, prostate cancer, and another form of prostate cancer called neuroendocrine prostate cancer. And then they did the use the technology to analyze the blood for DNA structures. And then they fed that data into a computer and asked the computer to distinguish between the structures in the cancer patients versus the structures in people who had had no cancer, normal patients. And lo and behold, the computer, through what's called machine learning, also called artificial intelligence, you may have heard of ChatGPT, these artificial intelligence that can answer a question you pose it, same concept, but now focused on medicine. So the machine learning could distinguish the patients that had cancers, bladder cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, and this other form of prostate cancer, with very, very high sensitivity and specificity. What that means is that the computer correctly found the person who had breast cancer over the person who had normal, had no cancer. Okay, well, this isn't too surprising because they trained the computer on this data. Okay, so it better get it right because the computer was asked to distinguish. What's more important is they then went to a second cohort of people, of patients' blood, from a different group of patients called the Grail cohort. Here, the blood was coming from patients with breast cancer, lung cancer, and prostate cancer, or normal. And again, the specificity and sensitivity of the assay was astounding. So what that means is that, yes, we can detect cancer by simply looking at a person's blood. So that means that we can start screening people well before they present with a cancer. You know, for instance, you go for a regular checkup, in the future they'll be able to take some of the blood that you give and perform this assay. And that's really changing the horizon for cancer care. We couldn't have done it without you, because that research was funded by GRACE. Okay? And so I want to thank you for all your efforts that you're doing tonight, tomorrow, Friday, all the efforts you've done before this, running up to this event every year. It really makes a huge difference because it allows us and people at Gunderson to do research we wouldn't be able to do otherwise and make changes. So again, thank you very much.
That was Dr. Kenny Lambert of the UW Carbone Cancer Center in Madison, who is in Richland Center on Wednesday night. Also in attendance at the Captain's Night and Survivor's Reception was Dr. Perrick Kinney, who talked about what's been happening at the Kabara Cancer Research Institute through Gunderson Health System.
I'm here also to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing over the past year or so and building on what we've been doing for many years with support from GRACE. So I just want to introduce the folks we have in the Cancer Center. We have two main research laboratories. Mine is the larger one, and we focus on breast, lung, melanoma, all different kinds of solid tumors. And my colleague, Dr. Cowden Dahl, on the right-hand side, runs our program in gynecological malignancies. So the biggest message I have, the only take-home message I have for you today is really thank you, to express, you know, on behalf of the folks in the lab and all of our cancer patients for the support that you've given us over the years. One of the big concepts we have in our group is this idea of precision medicine, precision oncology. So when you consider how cancer patients have been treated for a long time, you take patients that all on the surface look like they've got the same disease, like a colon cancer in this case, everybody generally gets the same drug. So you can see the green folks there on the left-hand side, they do pretty well in response to this drug. These multicolored folks in the middle, not too well, not too bad, and the blue guy at the end is actively harmed by the drug. So our concept in this whole area of precision medicine is not treating everybody the same, but to try to understand in individual patients what's going on with their tumor. So we can figure out who the green folks are, who the multicolored folks are, and who the blue guy is, and give each of them a drug that's specifically tailored for their cancer, so that everybody has the opportunity to respond because we're treating them for the actual disease that they themselves have, not the average disease that the average person tends to have. Another way to put that is we want to find the right patient, give them the right drug at the right dose and at the right time. And as Dr. Lambert was just talking about, in the cancer world, often that signal we're looking for is some measurement in the patient's DNA. So I'm going to talk about two short stories tonight that we've been building up with generous support from GRACE over the years. The first is our Gunderson Cancer Biobank that I've spoken about here before, and I want to give you a little bit of an update on that. And then the secondly, a new cancer treatment that we've been developing at Gunderson over the last year or so. So we've had a cancer biobank at Gunderson dating back to 2009. It didn't have the most auspicious beginning in the world. This is what it looked like in 2009. It was in the basement of the old Heilemann Brewery in La Crosse. So we've actually, you know, we've improved it quite a lot over the years. It's a steady march of progress, but we're in a state-of-the-art facility now on the UW La Crosse campus. If you guys are ever up there and if anyone is curious, drop me a line. Always happy to show people around. But what we do in this biobank is we gather cancer specimens and blood specimens, tissue specimens from cancer patients in our community to put those to use and work in the study of cancer research, because we believe that understanding the genetics of the patients and their tumors in our community is really the key to helping folks here access the types of advances that are happening in cancer research and cancer medicine that probably will eventually come to here. But having folks here in our community right now doing this work helps our patients, our friends, and our family members to access this type of advances. So we've banked a total of 114,000 specimens from over 12,000 people in our region over the past 15 or so years. So it's a tremendous resource to study the types of cancers that are most relevant. So many cancer patients who come to Gunderson are given the opportunity to consider participating in the biobank. We have a nice short brochure that explains to them some of the pros and cons of being involved. There's a short video that people can watch. It's 2.5 minutes. Very nice job by my friend and colleague Chris Stauffer, who put that together, to explain to folks why what we believe what we're doing is important and how it can potentially help the patients of tomorrow. So just one example of a study that we've been involved in this past year in using some of these specimens from the biobank is when a patient comes to the clinic and has a tumor removed, one of the things that the doctors often do is take out the lymph nodes as well. So these are small little tissue specimens about the size of a pea that are located all over our body. But if you can find a cancer cell within one of these lymph nodes near the tumor, that's the clue for the surgeons and the oncologists. You know what, this is a more high-risk tumor. Clearly, it's the cancer cells have started to spread. So the old-fashioned way of trying to understand how that works is you take one of these bean-sized organs and you chop it up and put it in these paraffin blocks, and you take these blocks and then you take a few slices here and there through them and you look at them under the microscope and you try to spot whether there's a signal for the cancer there. It's a very laborious process. You know, you only take a few slices through, so there's always the risk that you're going to miss some of these cancer cells. So what we've been doing is working and collaborating on a technology which will take these lymph nodes, whole lymph nodes, and make the tumor cells within them fluoresce so that we don't need to cut them anymore, but we can look at them and image the entire lymph node in what we call a hole mount setting, so that we can figure out within these lymph nodes, are there cancer cells lurking? And that will be the technology for the future that will help guide treatment choices for some of these patients and work out which patients are high risk and low risk. The second big project we've been working on this past year is a new antibody-based treatment that we've been developing for breast cancer. So this is a newer technology called antibody drug conjugates. So what you can see here, this is a cartoon of a cancer cell which has these proteins. You can see them here in brown on the outside. And these treatments are antibodies that recognize these proteins and get taken up by the cancer cells. And the antibodies have drugs attached to them that very, very potently kill the cancer cells. So the old way of treating cancer patients is to give them chemotherapy in a way that the chemotherapy travels all over the body, wreaking all sorts of havoc on all of the tissues. The goal here is to use these antibodies to focus that treatment directly on the cancer cell and spare the toxicity to the normal tissues. And this is even something that's been capturing the imagination of folks in the media. There's been quite a lot of articles about it in the past year or so. Our goal in making these antibodies is building on the work that we've done, the basic research we've done in the lab over 10 years on this gene called amphiregulin. So amphiregulin is a protein that sits on the outside of these cancer cells, and we've believed that this small stalk, what we call a neoepitope, that gets internalized in the cell is a really important part of how amphiregulin functions. So our goal has been to develop antibodies that very selectively recognize that tiny protein on the surface of these cancer cells, so that if we can attach drugs to those antibodies, we have a way of hijacking this normal recycling process that these cancer cells use to dispose of this tiny little protein and trick these cancer cells into taking up pretty high doses of chemotherapy. So we successfully made the antibodies, then we were wondering what type of chemotherapy to attach. So the one we choose is a molecule called MMAE, which was originally derived from this creature you can see here moving. It's a sea hare from the seas off the Philippines. So the spines you see in its back are very, very toxic. So if you stepped on one of these guys, you'd know all about it. So the drug that we've made is derived from the sea hare, and it attaches to the antibody and it breaks down these what we call microtubules in the cells, which are cables that the cell uses to move things around. So to see if it works, these are some mice that we have in the lab that have glow-in-the-dark tumors in them. You can see in the x-ray of the mouse here and a couple of tumors. And this is the mouse at the start of treatment. Here we're giving the mouse a placebo and monitoring it for a couple of months. And you can see the tumor here, when it gets a placebo, just continues to grow. We then tried a second placebo that's more closely related to the drug. You can see these mice, their tumors continue to grow as well. But then we took the drug that we developed in the lab and bound with this peptide from the sea, or this small molecule from the sea hare, and you can see completely eliminated the tumor. So we're now in the process of trying to build on this to identify which types of patients might be suitable for this type of treatment, and hopefully move that further steps towards the clinic. my lab is historically focused on breast cancer, but we wanted to know whether this treatment that we've been developing with the idea that it may be useful for breast cancer patients may be useful in other tumors as well. So these red bars here are the tumors in each of these categories that have the highest amounts of this amphiregulin. So breast on the left-hand side is clearly the winner, but prostate, lung, liver, and colon cancer, more than half of all of these tumors have high levels of this target as well. So we're now hopeful that this tumor targeting technology that we've developed with support from GRACE and other organizations may be helpful for our patients in the years to come. So all of these data have now been published in the literature over the past year or two. These are just some of the papers we've published with support from you guys. And all of these are focused on drug development, new treatments for cancer patients in our community, and studies in the laboratory to define how some of these complex genetic mutations that we find in cancer patients in our community work. So I'll wrap up again by thanking you. You guys have supported us for many, many years, and every year we've taken what you've given us and built on what we've done the year before, and I hope you all can take some pride in the accomplishments that I think we can all share. So I'll wrap up again by saying thank you very much to GRACE for everything that you guys have done for many, many years now.
Dr. Porrick Kenny, who spoke earlier this week at the Survivor's Reception and Captain's Night at Walk for Grace. This is The Morning Show from WRCO.